We're committing to collectively reduce our methane by 30% by 2030.
U.S. President Joe Biden unveils plan to cut methane emissions at COP26. It's Wednesday, November 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, climate pledges missing the mark? World Food Program says Madagascar may be suffering world's first climate-induced famine. Australia rejects French claims of AUKUS deal deception. COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy, and the fate of a female-run TV station in Afghanistan. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Now to Glasgow, Scotland, where U.S. President Joe Biden is spending another day at one of the most crucial climate summits in years. President Biden spoke at the UN conference on protecting the world's forests, his Build Back Better World plan, and his strategy for cutting greenhouse gas emissions. ABC News' Rena Roy has the latest now from Glasgow.
On day three of this crucial climate conference,
we're committing to collectively reduce our methane by 30% by 2030.
President Biden laying out his vision for a cleaner planet, unveiling a sweeping plan to cut methane emissions, a powerful greenhouse gas experts say is largely responsible for global warming. New strict rules will allow the EPA to crack down on the oil and gas industry, a producer of methane gas.
This isn't just something we have to do to protect the environment in our future. It's an enormous opportunity for all of us, all of our nations, to create jobs and make meeting climate goals a core part of our global economic recovery as well.
The White House also promising to protect tropical rainforests and forests at home.
This plan is the first of its kind, and taking a whole-of-government approach and working, in our case, with Congress to deploy up to $9 billion in U.S. funding through 2030 to conserve and restore our forests.
As Biden faces struggles at home with his Build Back Better plan, he is taking it to the world stage.
Build Back Better World is going to show that we can grow our economies, fight climate change, and leave a better, cleaner, more livable planet for all of our children.
For the first time in 5 years, the U.S. back at the table.
That was ABC News' Rena Roy reporting. More than 100 countries signed on to that historic methane pledge. It's the first time world leaders are collectively agreeing to cut down on that harmful gas. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Taliban say Islamic State gunmen stormed Kabul military hospital. Taiwan chip giant to expand to Japan. Former U.S. diplomat Bill Richardson meets with Myanmar junta leader. Yahoo halts services in mainland China. China-Myanmar at the forefront of U.S.-Indonesia meeting. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. There are stark warnings from scientists that a failure to agree to much deeper cuts in greenhouse gas emissions will result in catastrophic and irreversible climate change. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from Glasgow, Scotland for VOA, hopes are already fading that the COP26 climate summit will result in any new deal to save the planet.
The centre of Glasgow is locked down. These conference halls are officially United Nations territory for the next 2 weeks as world leaders line up to try to save the planet. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres set the tone.
Enough of killing ourselves with carbon. Enough of treating nature like a toilet. Enough of burning and drilling and mining our way deeper. We are digging our own graves.
Will that warning be heeded? Over 120 world leaders are attending, some defending their record on climate, others presenting new pledges to curb emissions. India is the world's third biggest polluter. Hopes were high that Prime Minister Narendra Modi would present new plans to cut emissions.
First,
By 2070, India will achieve the target of net zero emissions.
That date is 20 years later than the UN target of 2050, a major disappointment for many climate campaigners. The focus of the summit is not only about pledges made on stage, but about who hasn't shown up at all. President Xi Jinping of China, by far the world's biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, is not attending. He offered only a written statement and made no new significant pledges to cut emissions.
It could be because probably they don't have too much else to offer, and probably they would prefer to avoid the pressure of being in a COP. That could be the reality.
President Vladimir Putin of Russia, the world's fourth biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, is also absent. Among climate campaigners, the disappointment is already palpable.
This COP26 is so far just like the previous COPs, and that has led us nowhere. They have led us nowhere.
But others say COP26 shouldn't be written off.
To have finally a collective vision for the world that nobody's doubting or questioning, I think it is a good thing. But now we do need to have more clear actions, not only targets, but more clear action.
In summit after summit, world leaders have pledged ambitious targets to cut emissions. The message here is that it's time to turn those promises into concrete policies. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News at the COP26 Climate Summit in Glasgow.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, World Food Programme reports successive years of extreme weather events have plunged thousands of people into famine. Happening now in Asia, the UN Refugee Agency reports the first of three airlifts carrying winter relief for tens of thousands of Afghans will land in the capital, Kabul. The UNHCR plans to provide essential aid to 500,000 people before winter sets in. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us today on VOA Asia. The World Food Programme reports successive years of extreme weather events have plunged thousands of people in Madagascar into what WFP officials say may be the world's first climate-induced famine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
5 years of consecutive drought compounded by sandstorms as well as cyclones and invasion of locusts and growing insecurity have created what World Food Programme officials call the perfect storm. The latest UN Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, assessment of the food situation in Madagascar found 1.3 million people are suffering from acute hunger. WFP Deputy Country Director of Madagascar, Arduino Mangoni, says an estimated 30,000 people are suffering from famine.
This is basically the only and maybe the first climate change famine on Earth. If we look at the others, current food crisis, including famine-like conditions, so South Sudan, Yemen, and Ethiopia for the Tigray, they are all driven by conflict.
Mangoni says hundreds of thousands of people do not have enough food and have exhausted their coping strategies. He says many are surviving by eating cactus leaves, insects, and locusts. He says people must walk 30 to 40 kilometers to buy water, which is becoming more expensive. He says some people have sold everything, their land, their cattle, their household goods, are leaving their villages behind and migrating toward urban centers in search of help. He says about 500,000 children under age 5 are suffering from acute malnutrition. He adds an estimated 110,000 children are in a state of severe malnutrition and in need of special nutritional feeding to survive.
Whenever one enters a nutrition center, the situation is heartbreaking, with silence, no joy, kids just staring at you, and in a situation of really skin and bones.
Mangoni says he's worked in several emergencies, including Democratic Republic of Congo, the Central African Republic, and Darfur. He says he has never seen children in such a lamentable condition as these in Madagascar. In April, WFP was forced to cut food rations in half for 700,000 people because of lack of money. The agency began restoring cuts for thousands of the most vulnerable in September. Mongoni says WFP plans to further scale up food rations for many more people from December until what it hopes will be the next good harvest in April. To support this program, he says WFP urgently needs $69 million. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. In order to defend against the destructive effects of a warming planet, the government of Pakistan plans to plant 10 billion trees by 2023. All the important stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison rejected accusations French President Emmanuel Macron made about a scrapped $37 billion submarine deal. Macron has recently said Morrison lied when abandoning the submarine deal before Australia joined a new security pact with the United Kingdom and the United States, known by its acronym AUKUS. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
The AUKUS alliance and Australia's cancellation of a lucrative defence contract in favour of US-built nuclear submarines caught Paris off guard. France felt betrayed. In protest, France temporarily recalled its ambassadors from Washington and Canberra. Tensions remain. French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters at the meeting of the G20 grouping of industrialised nations that Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison had been deceitful, despite the two countries enjoying a close relationship.
When we have respect, we have to behave in line and consistently with this value.
Do you think he lied to you?
I don't think. I know.
Morrison quickly denied he had lied. He insisted he had explained to Macron in June that the submarines to be supplied by French company Naval Group weren't going to meet Australia's military requirements.
I was very clear that what was going to be provided to us was not going to meet our strategic interest.
News reports in Australia have described the dispute between Australia and France as a diplomatic disaster for Canberra and that the damage looks uncontrollable. Australian opposition Senator Penny Wong, the shadow foreign affairs minister, believes Australia has been embarrassed by the French president's allegations.
We've got a reputation as a nation for being straight shooters. That's Australia's reputation internationally. We do what we say. Mr. Morrison's failure to be upfront, his failure to, as President Macron says, tell the truth, is damaging our interests.
Mark Kenny is a professor at the Australian Studies Institute at the Australian National University. He says rarely are world leaders so openly criticised by their peers.
This was really quite a rare level of candour that we see, and a very abrupt denunciation of the integrity of a fellow world leader by Emmanuel Macron. And I thought that was extraordinary.
US President Joe Biden also conceded that the United States was clumsy in its negotiations for a new alliance with Britain and Australia, which cost France billions of dollars. The AUKUS pact will allow Australia to become only the seventh country to have nuclear-powered submarines. The new fleet isn't expected to be in service for decades, forcing Australia to potentially lease or buy vessels from the United States or Britain in the meantime. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia. Biotechnology company Novavax says Indonesia has given the world's first emergency use authorization for its COVID-19 vaccine, which uses a different technology than current shots and is easier to store and transport than some other shots. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, although 58% of Americans are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, many still hesitate to get the shot. And while the COVID-19 vaccine may be relatively new, the phenomenon of vaccine pushback is not. Lili Anisimov has the story, narrated by VOA's Anna Rice.
Scientists and medical professionals have been working to assure Americans that getting vaccinated is safe and the right thing to do. But some people still insist the vaccine may be unsafe. But while the COVID-19 vaccine is relatively new, the phenomenon of vaccine pushback is not. Some 70 years ago, people felt equally hesitant about the polio vaccine.
A vaccine stimulates the body to produce its own antibodies. These antibodies then can help prevent disease. That is how a vaccine against poliomyelitis works.
Scientists say that to eradicate a disease causing a pandemic, people need to have herd immunity, not in any one country, but around the globe. But in every country, there is some significant pushback against government-mandated vaccines. From 1998 to 2003, infectious disease epidemiologist Dr. David Heyman was executive director of the World Health Organization Communicable Diseases Cluster, heading the global response to severe acute respiratory syndrome, also known as SARS. Before that, he worked for 13 years as a medical epidemiologist in sub-Saharan Africa.
Back in 2003 in Nigeria, there was a rumor that the vaccine being used to eradicate polio was causing sterility in young girls. And therefore, the governors of the northern states of Nigeria stopped vaccination. Within a period of 6 months, Nigeria was the country with the most polio in the world. So it was a very, very difficult situation because of these rumors that the vaccine was not safe. However, through work with religious leaders, with government leaders, and with many others, the problem was solved, and Nigeria has now eliminated polio.
Dr. Jonas Salk, in collaboration with Soviet scientists, developed one of the polio vaccines in the U.S. Despite the less than perfect relationship between the two powers, global health care was deemed more important than political differences.
I think cooperation between nations when it comes to helping the population is incredibly intelligent and is the kind of thing that makes sense when you're talking about highly communicable diseases that can boomerang on us if we don't carefully control them, not only in our own countries, but worldwide.
People hesitant to get a COVID-19 vaccine often point out how quickly the vaccines were developed, and they believe that little is known about the vaccine's potential long-term side effects.
The concept of viral vectored vaccines in the late 80s, early 90s, and we had patented viral vector vaccines of various kinds already in the late 1990s. And by the early 2000s, we had adenovirus vectored vaccines that were in use for the Ebola outbreak, also relied on years and years, decades of knowledge and experience to make that vaccine.
According to the New York Times vaccination tracker, less than 40% of the world's population is currently vaccinated. For Lili Anisimova in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
In related news, this week Sri Lankan authorities began rolling out COVID-19 booster shots to frontline workers as the South Asian nation's top medical association warned of a possible virus surge. Pfizer booster jabs will be given initially to workers in the health, security, and travel sectors before including those above 60 years of age, the health ministry said. About 62% of Sri Lanka's 22 million people have been fully vaccinated, according to the ministry's statistics. And in other news, Afghanistan had a vibrant media when the Taliban took over the country in August. Among the multitude of diverse channels was one run by women. That channel is now folding due to Taliban threats and censorship. But the woman who was the driving force behind it refuses to give up. VOA's Aisha Tanzim spent time with her in Kabul. This is her story.
Zahra Nabi is wrapping up her life's work. Threats and censorship from the Taliban are forcing her to shut down her dream project, an all-female-run television station, Bano TV, in Kabul. A team of women technicians, producers, editors, reporters, and anchors ran the channel for nearly 4 years. Nabi remembers the ridicule she had to endure when she first thought of the idea in 2016. Because of religious beliefs and traditions in Afghanistan, many people think women cannot function in society without men.
They laughed. They said, how women? Women are not that much strong to do these things or to run a TV station. A TV station is a very big thing that you are thinking. It's not something that just a woman decided to drive a car or these things.
Nabi proved many naysayers wrong. Within 6 months of opening its doors in 2017, thanks to her smart financial planning, the station was making money. Then came the Taliban. Even before they took over the country in August, Nabi would receive phone calls harassing her over her station's content, especially the romantic dramas.
You know, before they took the control of the capital, we were running some dramas. So they gave us a call and said, what kind of drama is this? Who are paying you? Who are supporting you? Who did you receive funds from?
She tried to continue after the Taliban takeover, but soon found her work censored, especially on issues like women protesting for their rights.
On the protest day, I went there. They came hand to hands. They put the gun, these things, the first protest of women. So I put only some few pictures on our social media. But then when they saw, they suddenly gave a call and they saying that you are not allowed to put these things.
When she was physically harassed outside her apartment one day and complained to the Taliban security officials, Nabi said they refused to help unless she could bring a male relative to complain on her behalf. Her staff of 50 have left the country out of fear of the Taliban. Her TV channel is not operating anymore. She has no income. But she says nothing has broken her spirit. Armed with a camera and a computer, Nabi plans to continue the fight for freedom of speech despite the risks. Even though she's forced to wrap up this place, Nabi is not giving up her dream. She's planning to pay the rent for this place for at least 6 more months out of her own pocket in the hope of opening it up again. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
In science news, a team of scientists led by a researcher at Arizona State University says that they made the first direct measurement of the water and carbon in an exoplanet's atmosphere. VOA's Rick Pantaleo tells us more in today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of scientists says they are the first to directly measure the amount of water and carbon monoxide in the atmosphere of an exoplanet. The team, led by Professor Michael Line of Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona, used the Gemini South Telescope in Chile to determine the atmospheric components of a planet called WASP-77AB. The exoplanet is considered by astronomers to be a hot Jupiter, since its mass is 1.76 times more than Jupiter, and according to NASA, orbits only 3.6 million kilometers from its sun. Located some 340 light-years away, WASP-77AB only takes 1.36 days to orbit its sun, and is tidally locked, which means it has a permanent day and night side. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And in space news, officials say a medical issue has sidelined one of four astronauts assigned to SpaceX's upcoming flight to the International Space Station and delayed the launch. NASA said the launch is now off until Saturday night at the earliest. Liftoff had been scheduled for this past Sunday, but bad weather offshore moved it to Wednesday. It's the first time in decades that a U.S. flight has been delayed by a crew member's health. Officials would not say which astronaut is affected. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.